Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
This is Jerry Crocco from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was invited to speak at Holden Village in 2016 on the topic of the centennial of the National Park Service, an agency of the federal government in the Department of Interior that manages national park units across the nation, some 415 approximately in the country. The year 1916 was when the agency was established. That does not mean, however, that there were parks just to be formed at that time. Actually, the idea of parks is worth sketching a bit. Why do we set aside land for public pleasure and enjoyment for present and future generations? That idea lies in the notion that in the United States, when our colonizers and the expansion westward was going on, we were motivated by manifest destiny. Somehow God ordained that we should spread across the continent. And as a result, we exploited resources left and right. We were not good stewards of creation in North America. And that exploitation included native populations, American Indians, as well as mineral resources, farmland, ranch land, forests, waters, all of creation in a sense. And developing the idea that we should set aside land really stems from the notion that we were conquering a wilderness. And in conquering a wilderness, we determined that civilization needed to spread, our form of civilization, that is. And we were so intent on developing those resources that we didn't manage the land well. We weren't good stewards, as I said previously. The upshot of it all is that as the industrial age occurred and workers toiled long hours every day, perhaps 6 days a week, they looked for some forms of recreation that would take them away from the workplace, some kind of enjoyment. And those ideas are wrapped in the notion that land could be set aside for parks. An illustration of that is when Frederick Law Olmsted designed Central Park in New York City. That was a kind of generator of the idea of parks for public enjoyment. Olmsted surfaced in California in 1864 after developing Central Park and was smitten with Yosemite Valley. And that valley, which became a national park later in the 19th century, was endowed with terrific scenery and resources. And scenery is kind of a theme in the early national parks, and for some yet today, scenery is what motivates people to visit parks. We all know that scenery is a bit like art. It's in the eye of the beholder. So what is scenic for me may not be scenic for you. The notion of setting aside land for Yosemite was a state enterprise early on, but in 1872, the Congress of the United States passed legislation that's called enabling legislation, setting aside lands in northwestern Wyoming and parts of Montana that's called Yellowstone National Park. That is the first established national park in the USA. And it sets a terrific precedent for around the world, because one of the good ideas that has been exported from the United States is the national park system. And other nations have followed suit, establishing their own park system. It's a good idea, one that is a part of what has made America great and continues to be, adding to that notion of the greatness of the nation. Well, Yellowstone was populated by recreationists who were brought by passenger train on the Great Northern Railway to Livingston, Montana, and then they were brought into the park on stagecoaches to enjoy the sights and sounds, the smells, and all of the wildlife that inhabited what is now Yellowstone. This idea then spread to other parks, including Olympic National Park in Washington, the Grand Canyon, which started out as a national monument, part of the nomenclature of the National Park Service. Teddy Roosevelt established the, under the Antiquities Act, Grand Canyon National Monument, which in the early 1900s was established as a national park. Probably the third most visited park in the United States at the present time, Great Smokies being the most visited national park in North Carolina and the Appalachians. The idea of having management of a land base like the national parks was related to the notion of preserving resources. Not wise use of resources like other federal agencies, like the Forest Service, for example, but protection and preservation for present and future generations. And that idea has been the mission of the National Park Service, and it's a duality that's somewhat contradictory, because you want the public to enjoy the parks and you want to preserve the parks. And that doesn't always work out well, given some heavy uses of certain parks especially. The phrase, loving the parks to death, is one that was developed in the late 20th century and has some application certainly today. But the notion of protection of resources was enhanced as the Park Service was founded as an agency. It wasn't always a popular idea. Congress was pushed into establishing the agency, which manages the national parks across the nation. And the first director of the National Park Service, Stephen Mather, was characterized as being an eternal sophomore. He was very enthusiastic about everything that he did, selling the idea to prominent leaders in the nation and the Congress that there should be additions to the park system. So we developed parks like Mesa Verde, an archaeological park in the Four Corners of the Southwest. We added historic sites. Now there are more historic sites than there are national parks. Small ones, for example, like Little Bighorn in Montana or Fort Laramie in Wyoming, national historic sites related to westward expansion. In the 1930s, the War Department, which managed all of the national battlefields associated especially with the Civil War, were folded into the national park system. So battlefields like Antietam and Gettysburg and Shiloh and Stones River and Chickamauga, Chattanooga, all came into the Park Service as units managed by the Park Service, as they still are. Increased use of parks determined in the public's eye that there needed to be more of them, and Congress was pushed to develop more, especially in the 1950s and 60s. There was a badly needed program for restoring park roads and campgrounds and building new facilities in the 1950s and 60s that came to be known as Mission 66, which was the 50th anniversary of the National Park Service. So this year of 2016, there's been an impetus, but nothing approaching the funding support from the Congress recently approaches what was done in 1960 on the 50th anniversary of the Park Service. Mission 66 under Director Conrad Wirth was a big, big program to establish the parks with facilities for the public. And in the 60s and 70s, under the directorship of George Hartzog, many more units were added to the parks, especially during the administration of Richard Nixon. A whole group of parks came into the system, and during presidency of Jimmy Carter, we added a number of units in Alaska on an acreage basis. Alaska has more acres of national parks than any of the other states. The whole notion of support for national parks, however, comes from the public. The citizens of the nation prioritize the importance of the parks and push the Congress into appropriating dollars to manage the national parks or even to add to parks. Among those efforts were parks established that were important to the history of the nation. And so it's a cultural endeavor on the part of the nation to add to that. With the National Park Service established in the late 20th century and the early 21st century, some new parks have been added. However, one group of National Park Service related areas is called the National Trail System. And that legislation was passed in 1968 and amended in 1978 to include scenic and historic trails. A couple of illustrations. The scenic trails include the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail and the Appalachian National Scenic Trail. Historic trails include the Oregon Trail, the Santa Fe Trail, the Iditarod in Alaska, and there are now 30 national trails authorized by Congress to commemorate the recreation, in the case of scenic trails, of hiking end-to-end or parts of a scenic trail, and the historic trails where you can access the trail occasionally to enjoy the history of the westward expansion of the nation primarily, although not all are triumphal trails. Selma to Montgomery commemorates the civil rights of the 1960s, and the Trail of Tears commemorates the forced removal of the Cherokee from their homelands. So all told, over 400 units of the National Park Service are visited by the public, and it's very important for citizens to continue to support the national parks, not only for the present, but especially for the generations to come after us.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information, or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.